Shoot, we gonna have a premiere stand. Hey, yo, premiere, man. Come over here to Victory, baby. We're going to show you Wagwan, you know?
Yeah. Indeed. You can come get that Boom Bap Syndicate stamp.
Absolutely, man. Get that Boom Bap Syndicate stamp, man. You know what I mean? The next... We opened up for Premier, man, 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Right?
That's right.
Premier and Meth and Red. That was at the Enzo nightclub.
Yeah.
And we shut that bitch down, man, all the way. You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. watching Premier live... playing all of these classic cuts. It was
it was
incredible, man. I remember Cahill, man. Cahill almost lost his shit. He was up there in the front.
Yeah.
Singing all of the songs that Primo was playing, man. You know what I mean? Shout out to Cahill, man. Just dropped a new song with Marcel. Man, go look out for my man Cahill, man.
Indeed.
K-L-L-S. Yes, indeed. Yes, yeah.
And I meant to say, you know, the DJ Premier stamp is very sought out for and high demand, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, if you're local and you're listening to us right now, the Boom Bap Syndicate on CJSF 90.1, you can strive to get our stamp by sending us your music,
yes,
or any messages that you might have for us. You can reach us right now on Instagram as well.
That's right.
Boom Bap Syndicate. No caps, no numbers, just plain Boom Bap Syndicate. Hit us on there, send us a message. Anything you might, you know, want to share with the people, or send in any music you got, and perhaps they can get the stamp. Hardbody, what you think?
I most definitely think they could get the stamp as long as this, you know, Boom Bap, and it represents hip hop at its most, you know, purest form.
There,
man,
we go.
You know what I mean?
There we go.
And we actually would like to take this moment to pay respects to the land that we play on.
Yes,
you know,
sir,
what I'm saying? That we spit on. And I mean, when I say spit, we're talking about rapping, not spitting on the lad. You know what I'm saying? We deal with the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, the Squamish Nation, mm-hmm. and many other nations. And so we want to acknowledge that, of course, as, you know, the original people, man, because the original people of this land, it belongs to them. And it's actually interesting because, you know, there's a nation out where you at, God, Lulu Island up there, that mm-hmm. just won a major case, and they're getting a lot of their property back, and mm-hmm. They built some big things there, mm-hmm. and the government did or whatever, and this company, and that's all having to go away,
mm-hmm.
and so there's a lot of people scared right now in BC because the land that they're playing on is not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens when you get fooled, right? You know, how many people spent years, months, and days paying for their homes?
Yeah.
And now their homes are at risk.
Yeah.
To go back to the original makers and owners.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they might hate me for saying this, but look, it's not yours to begin with.
No. Well, whoever may have sold it to you, it wasn't theirs to begin with.
It wasn't theirs to begin with. That's what I mean. It wasn't theirs to begin with. So, with all due respect, don't cry.
Pay respects,
yeah, man. Because this is the land of the indigenous. And when and indigenous just means of the land. You know what I mean?
Mm.
The original man's land, right, was taken away, stolen, tricked for, right? So
I've heard that story one too many times.
You know what I'm saying, God? So, you know, people are worried. And even if you look at the gas issue, you know where people are going to get their gas in the States? The Native Reserves. Right? So, yeah, man, you know, let my original people play, man. You know what I mean? Because this is all ours. You know what I mean? Respectfully. This is all ours. Respectfully.
Mm.
So, with that being said, I pay my respects and acknowledge, you know, those, all the original nations here. that were here before colonization. Black, brown, yellow.
Yes.
Black, brown, yellow.
Amen.
Amen. So, we're going to continue on with a little bit of this interview. Come back, maybe around a one or two, and let y'all know what's coming up, man, for the future, for the Boom Bap Syndicate, baby.
Indeed. Yep. So, coming up, man, DJ Premier is going to go back into his early life. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say midlife after he takes flight. However, there's always still problems, man. People try to give you a label sometimes, no matter what you do.
Let's go.
They might try to box you in. So here's Premier going back, talking about defying genre labels.
Let's go.
Peace.
Peace.
With us, you know, loaning them money and taking care of everybody at the bar and all that type of stuff. In my career, what have I learned from my biggest mistake? Being good to too many people that ain't good to you in return. You know, financially, friend-wise, it just goes with the territory. The only thing is, just get those scissors and cut them off and keep it pushing.
When the press talked about you, people tried to put you in a little bit of a box as a group, and it became like, oh, they're like jazz rap or something like that. How did you guys internally think about that when you started seeing people kind of trying to brand you in that way? And did you, you know, did you make moves to consciously move out of that?
Guru hated that label. He hated it. I did too. But for him, he hated it because he was like, man, I want the streets to love us. And I think they already do. He's like, yeah, but they keep calling us jazz rap. And he said, jazz rap is rapping about jazz, like saying, and hear the horn coming down, and hear the drummer. You know, he said, that's jazz rap. We're talking about shit that's going on, who's going to take the weight, and just to get a rep. And, you know, and they, even that was based off of him getting robbed. And the guy died in a car chase with us chasing after him with the police. And the guy dies, hits an ice cream truck and passes away on impact. Next day we did the record. So the jazz rap thing got to him so much that I was like, you know what? When we do, it was going all the way to Daily Operation. Hard to Earn, I stripped everything down purposely to not even have any jazz samples except for mostly the voice, which is an upright bass sample, but I started using space sounds and weird, just galactical stuff, just anything to stray away to show that we're good on any sound that we put out there and create.
In that period of 88 to say 94, hip hop music is changing radically every 6 months, 9 months. Mm-hmm. And I've always been curious how artists like yourself in that moment were able to be in front of the trends. How were you guys staying on top of things and sort of forecasting the way that the sounds were going to change, you know, tempos, all that?
For us, we were really out there keeping up with everything happening. I mean, we were really addicted to going out. You know, Guru, I mean, he had to go out all the time. He's never like, I'm gonna chill this weekend. That's just how he is. And everybody that knows him, you're bored and 20 other friends don't want to go nowhere, call him. He's going. Yeah, where are we going? We were really into everything. Same thing when we met Biggie. Mr. C lived down the block from us. He used to stress me to listen to his Biggie demo tape. And I was like, yeah, and kind of brush him off. See Mr. C again. Yo, and I'm talking about, and C can have an attitude. Yo, Biggie Smalls, man. I'm like, all right. Maybe 3 days later, Guru's like, yo, you got to hear this guy, Biggie Smalls, down the block. He's dope. I'm going to freestyle with him. I'm like, where's he at? And he's on Fulton and Washington. All right, I'll go with you. Suge is with us. Dap is with us. Lil' Kim's there. We didn't even know she's rapping. And Nino and Chico and Clep, everybody. And Biggie's out there just rhyming. And he's already a big Gangsta fan. And And that's how we all got cool, way before he even had a record. You know, Party and Bullshit hadn't even been out yet. And that was now our new hangout. We don't go hang out with Big. Chubb Rock lived in our neighborhood. Lady of Rage, that's how I met her. And she got frustrated with not getting a deal and getting nothing popping in New York. She said, I'm going to see if I can find Dr. Dre. I'm like, yeah, okay. We have a Gangstar show at the Palladium on Sunset Boulevard. And she goes, yo, I found Dr. Dre, and he signed me to this new label called Death Row. And I'm like, Death Row? She's like, yeah, he just started a brand new label. And I'm on the list. She said, he got an album called The Chronic coming out, and you're going to see me on there.
Around the time of Hard to Earn, your career starts to go through a bit of a metamorphosis. You do the records on Illmatic, records on Ready to Die, then solo works with the Gangstar Foundation guys, with J. Rue and Group Home, and then kind of capping with Reasonable Doubt, Jay-Z's debut. I feel like that really elevated you relative to where you were, both with your competitive peers at the time, but also even within the group. And I'm curious, did that run of records change the dynamic between you and Guru at all, or how things operated within the group?
I want to say yes and no, but the fact that he was cool with everybody, so he was never hating on them.
Okay.
You know, so he never had a problem with Big, Jay, Nas, anybody. But Guru's main complaint, again, was just me. He always felt like I was getting more accolades than he was. And I was always like, yo, everybody loves you just as much. It's like, no one's like, oh, yeah, we only like Premier, not you. And I said, and you're not, and obviously this pre-social media era, where are you getting that from? Really, anytime we would fight over stuff, it'd be nonsense. Man, plus with his alcoholism, it intensifies even more. But one thing I was always good at, I don't want to call myself like a psychiatrist or anything, but I always knew, talk him down off the ledge and just be like, dude, it's going to be all right. Everything's going to be fine from fights he getting with people to people that would do disrespectful things to him outside of when I wasn't around. I'd be like, yo, I'll take care. Everything was always, I'll take care of it.
Was that hard to, I mean, you guys are, you know, in this committed relationship as you know, business partners, as creative partners, mm-hmm. and you're living together, and he obviously has an issue with alcohol. And, you know, how did you sort of deal with that and navigate it?
I loved what we had, the Gangstar relationship, and our we were consistent with records. Every album was consistent. Every album was successful. I love what we had, and he loved what we had. So we don't want to break that up. And it just, through all those fights, and we had many, we'd always go back in the lab and make heat and laugh. And then I was always saying to people, how can we make that many albums and do that many tours as successfully if we really hated each other? You can't do it.
It was more like brothers and just...
Yeah, so it definitely wasn't a friendship. It was definitely a brotherhood. Definitely brothers.
Is it true that Now Your Mind was a sub at you?
Yep. We got into a big fight. And I had food poisoning, so I was really, really... I was throwing up so much. He was having an argument with somebody in our house. He got violent. I'm trying to separate him, but I'm weak, but I'm strong enough to hold him. You know, but when he's really mad, he's strong, man. He's like, get off, you know, like really get off of me. I'm holding him. I'm like, dude, I'm going to let you go. But you better not hit me because I'm out of breath. I'm so weak. He goes, all right, I'm cool. I let him go. We're still breathing heavy, and he just uppercuts me. I'm talking about catches all of this. And I just said, motherfucker. And there was an iron. I just remember swinging it. Boom, boom, boom. Just like just swinging it uncontrollably because I'm just blacking out now because I really cannot handle anymore because I'm that weak. But I just remember the blood shooting out his head. And it's shooting out so much that it's running down his face. And I swear to God, that DMX cover, Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood, every time I see that cover, I think of Goo, because that's what he looked like. Now I caught myself, like, oh my God, now I'm trying to stop the blood, and I'm holding him, I'm like, we gotta go to the hospital. From there, they sew him up, and White Man Can't Jump was about to come out, but they were doing a hip hop soundtrack as well. And they had just paid us, you know, I think it was like 40 grand, which was a big deal back then, to do one song. And they were like, you got to record it tomorrow because it's due. And we didn't know the fight was going to happen. But they said, if you don't want to do it, just give him the money back. He said, nah, I'm going to do the song. We go to D&D. He said, turn all the lights on. And he just looked at me and just said, yo, dude, you're dead wrong. You never have the skills like mine. I write the ill-type rhymes now. I read them up. And he's just looking at me. And while the beat's playing, I'm just looking at him. And he's just looking at me. One take. And I remember when he's finished with it, he goes, are we good? I was like, yeah, we're good. He goes, and fuck you. And he just knocks the whole mic over and just storms out of the building. But we got the take. And now your mind's a classic.
Crazy.
Do I ever get creatively blocked? Yes. There's just time just not working. From music to your life, your family, everything. But the one thing I do is I never, ever quit. Never will you ever see me quit anything.
Around 1996, you arrive at what I think most people think of as the premier sound, the peak and identifiable sounds that people associate with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was there a specific record that you made and you felt like, oh, this, like I've unlocked the next level of what I do?
Definitely a lot of stuff on KRS's album, Return of the Boom Bap. Definitely Mass Appeal was a huge step into, you know, we do it differently than everybody else, and I know how to tap into what, you know, sound-wise, yeah, Mass Appeal was huge. You know, even the Biggie stuff, I mean, Unbelievable was me telling him I don't have time to do a record with you before, because he was like, I just need one more. And I'm like, Big, I don't have time, man. I said, I'll get you on the next album. And he was just like, yo, I don't care if it's Impeach the President. Just make me just something. I was like, you know what? Meet me at D&D. He came. I just had those funny, the one note, and I just tuned him to different keys and just started playing around with him. And he was like, yo, do that, do that. And after it was all done, he was like, yo, you should take the R. Kelly. When he says it's unbelievable, cut that. I'm like, man, it might not be in key. He said, just try it anyway. I did it. I was like, that shit fits. Turned it in, mastered it with Hit Factory, and then boom. Had to be 3 days later, if that. And me and Gordon are driving back to Brooklyn, and we hear Unbelievable blasting in somebody's system. And I'm like, yo, we just did that 3 days ago, and somebody's bumping it.
With Gangstar, I've always found it really interesting the way that you guys put together your songs and your album titles. Can you tell me a little bit about that process?
Guru makes a list of the titles, and we stick it on the wall.
So before there's any album or anything?
Any beat, yeah.
There's a list of song titles.
Man, he always titled the album. Hard to Earn, he was like, you're going to name the album. We were just having a conversation, and I was like, man, what we do, people don't realize, man, what we do is so hard to earn. He goes, that's the title right there. You just named it. He said, you're naming the next one. We were both going through a rough time. I said, this should be called Moment of Truth. You're facing a 5-year jail bid. And I'm going through a lot of people that were dying in my life that was just having me off point with my thinking and just my, you know, how I was feeling. Mainly for him possibly going to jail. Because we were going through court while we were working on the record. That's why Moment of Truth, he was really going through the stress of facing that. So that's why that record is so powerful. And, it's our first gold album. That was another thing, too. He used to tear the crib up about, man, everybody's going platinum and gold, and we should have been gold like everybody. That we were just as good as them. I'm like, one day it's going to happen. That's how calm I am. It's going to happen, man. Moment of Truth goes gold. He was the happiest kid in the room.
What are the qualities about your personality that you hold to the most tightly on your journey?
For one, not being an asshole. I'm far from that. Everybody knows I'm very humble. It took me a long time to even want to be able to speak in interviews because Guru, God bless him, was always the one that loved the red carpet. I'd be like, I'm not doing a red carpet and sitting there going, look to the left, look to the right. He loves it. And I was like, you do it and I'll play the background. After years and years of playing that position of being in the background, I eventually got the courage to start to speak up and not be afraid to talk in front of an audience and even on stage. But one thing everybody will tell you is I'm a cool dude.
In that moment around Life After Death, you sort of achieve a status where anyone that wants to have an album that's considered a classic has to come to you for some heat. And that, you know, comes, I think, out of Jay, Nas, and Big all mm-hmm. sort of leaning heavily on you for some of the most important records on their classic albums. Up until when you guys put out The Owners, there's a fairly linear continuity in the sounds of hip-hop, and coming from 88 through 2003 with, mm-hmm. you know, when Hov and 50 are on top.
Right.
In the 6 to 8 years after that, you know, the center of hip-hop moves to Atlanta. Sounds start to shift. You were obviously, you know, in your late 30s, early 40s around that time. Did your relationship with the music go through any ups and downs or any changes in that time?
Not at all. We kept still doing how we do it. Because I'm a fan of music anyway, so I'm like, you know, if we supported you in what you do and we're fans, keep feeding us stuff that we love. And because there's a lot of groups that just started coming with stuff. I'm like, oh, this ain't hot. And you're disappointed. And I want you to anticipate that the next thing that we deliver is going to be still what you expect from us. Yeah, like we said, it updates, but still it sounds like us. I feel like you still got to sound like you.
In the sort of late aughts, you stepped out and produced a record for Christina Aguilera that is, you know, probably one of the more high-profile things that you've done in your entire career. It seems like she had a very specific vision and, you know, worked very closely with you in collaborating on that. You know, what did you learn from working on such a big pop record?
I definitely got to give a big shout to her her ex-husband, Jordan Bradman, because he put her on to me, Tribe, a few other artists. She was looking to do that type of a sound of an album and take it back to and go retro with that era. When I met her, I remember she's like, yo, I love the Group Home album. I'm like, Group Home? you know? And she was like, yeah, I like this song. And I like the Biggie record. I love these Gangstar records. You know, she was just naming them all off the head. And I remember when people were finding out that I was about to work with her, like, you're going to sell out and do the pop thing. And I'm like, nah, it's not selling out. We're going to do good records, and it's going to do what it do. We get a Grammy for the single.
Crazy.
You know? And I've gotten Grammys for albums, but to get one for a single, it hits different because it's like, it's just your song. You get a Grammy. I tell a good idea from a bad idea just by how it hits me in my soul. If it doesn't hit me in my soul, no matter what the topic or situation, I'm going to make sure that I thumb it down or thumb it up.
Okay.
Guru passes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that was an amazing interview, man. The nuances, man. I love it. If you're a producer or anything like that, definitely check it out on your own time. Maybe take some notes to it. There's indeed, a lot of gems
indeed.
In there.
Indeed. And that was Idea Generation.
Idea Generation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. DJ Premier. And that's really just the beginning of what we're going to bring to you, you know what I mean, as the listener, right? Tapping into many different interviews, and I mean, I'm looking forward to our next one. That's going to be our liberation show.
Indeed.
And yeah, man, we just do this for y'all, man. We want to continue to keep the spirit alive. with hip hop.
Yeah.
Right? And just even listening to how many songs Premier has really done.
Yeah.
That the relationship that he had with Guru.
Yeah.
I knew that Guru was an alcoholic. Yeah. You know, he died of alcoholism, right?
Mm.
But to hear Premier talk about the fighting and all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the one thing that stuck out the most was he said, we weren't friends, we were brothers.
Yeah.
And that reminds me of a conversation I had with Born Truth, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're not looking for friendship, we're looking for brotherhood, because there's a different accountability to that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
Indeed. It's very true.
Yeah, God.
Man, you guys, look forward to next episode, man, and the next episode, and the next episode, and the one after that, and it's going to keep going on and on.
Yes, sir. We're going to be bringing that Bars Without Borders very soon.
Bars Without Borders coming.
Come on.
In the next moon.
Come on, man. The next moon cycle, God. Like, word. We got, man. We got three OGs. We got MC K-Ski.
Yeah.
Ash's Fifth Born.
Yeah.
And Yardi Samson.
Yes.
DJ Heck. We got have DJ Promo.
Yes.
We got DJ Hector providing the beats.
Yes.
Y'all got to stay tuned, because on April 29th, we're going to have the first all-female cypher.
Oof.
On the 106 o'clock Blitz show.
Boom, 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 boom.
From 6 to 8. We're going to have Ndidi Cascade. We're going to have Loka. We're going to have Artanista. We're going to have Bonafide. We might have Kia Kadari. And my brother Traj is going to be providing the beats.
Yes.
And me and King Wise will be there. And this is going to be incredible, man. Because this is really the precursor to Bars Without Borders.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. That's true. It's like the prelim. It's the episode zero, in a sense.
It's the episode zero.
Yeah.
Or the episode cipher.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because the cipher still has value. Whereas the zero doesn't. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see that.
Unless it's after the comma.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Like $1 million.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
Then it's got value.
Mm.
But if it comes before the one, then what is it? It's got no value.
Mm.
Ain't that some shit, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Ain't that some shit?
Mm.
So, without further ado, we say to you, peace.
Peace.
I'm Hard Body Dreams.
And I'm King Wise.
And this is the...
The Boom Bap Syndicate.
Peace.
Peace, everybody.
This is Bird Note. I'm Michael Stein. Bird Note is an independent nonprofit organization, and this week we're asking you to support Bird Note with a donation at birdnote.org. But today, rather than tell you all the great things about Bird Note, we're going to let our feathered friends do the talking. Enjoy this minute of uninterrupted bird song. Your donations allow us to put joyful birdsong on the radio. Please support Bird Note with a tax-deductible donation today at birdnote.org. Every gift helps us produce the stories you love and share them with your amazing local radio station. Just go to birdnote.org today. And thanks.